The views expressed on this program are the views of the individual broadcaster and by no means reflect the view of Wesleyan University or the WESU management. Hello, and welcome to Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, a progressive-minded radio show about faith and action, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown, and WESUFM.org, providing community radio that matters. I'm Maria Johnson. Today, a chat with two artists who were commissioned to create the Stations of the Cross and altar furniture for St. Catherine of Siena Catholic Church in West Simsbury, Connecticut. The pastor there totally gets the spiritual importance of church art and raised the money to pay for it. This would be interesting enough, except that the artists who created the works, Holly Whiting and Dana Cinto, are atheists. The work they produced is so beautiful, I would call it inspired. But what would they call it? We talk about their creative process and their deep respect for the faith, even though they don't share it. In between the segments, you'll hear excerpts from interviews I did with my portable mic at the opening reception at the church, including the pastor, Father Michael White. Can't listen live or want to see pictures of Holly's Stations of the Cross and Dana's presider's chair? Find the audio and photos posted later tonight at reasonablycatholic.com. A word about the station's spring pledge drive. It hurts me to say it, but it looks like we may not make our goal this season. If you haven't already given and you can afford to help, please go to WESUFM.org and give what you can. Thanks. Up next, Holly Whiting and Dana Cinto. Welcome, Holly Whiting and Dana Cinto.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is going to be so much fun, and it makes me wish I had listeners.
Maybe we could get some listeners.
Maybe. So, where to begin? You're artists, and the way I came across your work is how? Oh, I remember.
You came to my studio at Open Studios.
Yes.
In October, last year?
Probably.
17?
And your studio is at Rector Square in New Haven.
Yes.
Which is a humming hive of creativity. I met your partner there.
My husband.
Your husband. Mm-hmm. And, oh my gosh, what beautiful work. But I think what captivated me, and I'm always thinking of the program, of course, was an example of one of your Stations of the Cross, which you were commissioned to do for St. Catherine of Siena Parish, a Catholic parish in West Simsbury.
Right.
Dana, Holly did the Stations of the Cross, and
correct.
You did
the presider's chair, which is the chair that the priest sits in, that's up in the sanctuary, and also the little table to the side of it.
Yes. Gorgeous woodwork.
Thank you.
Oh my gosh. Front, back. I'm going to post
pictures.
From
every angle.
Right. I am going to make sure people see everything. But really, it won't do it justice to look at it on your screen, folks. You need to get your butt to St. Catherine of Siena Parish and see it in the actual setting that it was created for. It was breathtaking.
Thank you.
And I went to the unveiling, right? Is that what we would call it? The opening?
Yeah, I guess it was a reception, opening reception.
Opening reception.
Yeah, but also a mass.
And it wasn't a mass.
No,
it was
you're
the
right.
reading was of the station.
Yeah,
yes.
The stations. Yeah.
The Stations of the Cross, because it was during Lent.
Yep.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And people, oh my gosh, were you feeling the love?
I was, and I
yeah.
knew you were.
Yeah, I got a really good
we
response.
We had a lot of, I mean, everybody just had so many questions and were so curious about what we did.
Right.
And Holly's paintings are just absolutely stunning.
Mm, thank you.
Just ridiculously stunning.
Yeah.
And they're so
full of feeling and
yes,
expression.
Yes.
Oh, the ones of Mary especially are heartbreaking.
God. Yes. They really are. You could just see her anguish. And Jesus' anguish, I mean, they're just so moving.
Right.
Have you, Dana, ever made a presider's chair? It's kind of an unusual item, even among us Catholics.
I never have. I didn't even know what it was called.
Yeah.
So
Either did I.
Yeah, no, I had no idea what it was even called. And so I called my brother, who's a deacon.
Yeah.
And I said to him, what's the name of the chair that the priest sits in, you know? And he said, well, that's a celebrant's chair or a presider's chair.
Priest's chair.
So, yeah, no.
It's, throne.
It's, yeah, no, it's not throne. A throne. Don't ever call it a throne, according to Father Michael.
Oh.
We don't call it a throne because he's not a king.
He's so funny.
He is. Right? He's the best.
He is.
So, yeah. So, you know, I didn't know what it was. And I had the appointment to go and visit Father Michael and Mike to talk about it. And I just wanted to have some sort of background about, okay, what am I getting myself into? I don't want to walk in there like, you know, some idiot. Yeah. So, you know, prepared myself. And, you know, I got there and they just sort of led me through the whole process of design, you know, telling me exactly what it was and what its purpose was. And then we
had there been one already?
There was one there, and it was like
a folding chair.
No, and it was like basically off the rack. You know, had like a bunch of
ecclesiastical.
You know, yeah,
and if you know Father Michael, he can't abide anything.
No,
off
nothing
the rack.
About him is off the rack. Exactly.
I love him.
He is hilarious, and he's
wonderful.
And
you know what else kind of makes it. I don't want to sound like I'm enjoying his troubles, but it makes it extra rich somehow that he endured a terrible illness that involved his needing a kidney, and a parishioner donated a kidney.
Right.
I mean that's how loved he is.
He it's absolutely really, is that loved.
Yeah, it's really something.
And now he's doing great.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Looks great.
No, he looks fantastic.
So, okay, so many questions.
Okay.
How... Maybe you can answer this one, Holly. How, or if Father found you first, how did he find you?
That's a good question. I think it's very unromantic. I think he just did a Google search and came up with me. Probably searched like Connecticut artists or something. I don't know. I'm pretty sure that's how he found me. Although most of my work comes from referrals and
okay.
But honestly,
we'll have to ask him.
Yeah, maybe
because when I think about Googling you up, I don't think I'm going to see figures so much as in like landscapes,
abstracts. Yeah, exactly. I do very few figures. I do more landscapes, birds, animals.
Right. Something about your style.
I don't know why he was drawn to my work, but and I was of course nervous when I went to meet him because I don't have a lot of figure work.
Yeah.
And I did like Danny, you know, I had to do a little research first and find out. You know, I knew what the Stations of the Cross were, but I had, you know, I was raised Catholic, so I kind of knew the idea, but I really had to go back and, you know, do a little research, Googling myself and find out, you know, exactly what we're talking about here.
And in fact, there already existed stations there.
They were not tiny little relief sculptures that could barely be seen, you know, from the pews.
And do you think that was Father's concern that no one can see these images?
Yeah, that was part of it. Yeah, he wanted something, you know, more, I don't know.
Affecting.
More artful and affecting. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Well, then I guess my next question, it's hard to know what my next question is. I have like a whole little tsunami in my head. You mentioned that you were raised Catholic. Is that the same for you, Dana?
Yep.
So, but neither of you now practice.
Correct.
Right.
Which is interesting. I mean, we may as well just talk about that.
Okay.
Because now your art hangs in a church.
Yeah.
Which is of great amusement to my mother.
Yeah. And my friends are appalled. My Catholic friends are appalled.
Your Catholic friends are appalled.
Yeah.
Catholic artist friends who said, why didn't we get that job?
Right? Yeah. I'm in the club.
Yeah, my brother also, who he thinks it's hilarious.
Yeah.
You know, that I, you know, his atheist sister got a commission to do this very, you know, this important art that, you know.
It's so personal.
It's very, yeah. People really, I mean, and I understand the importance of it. I mean, their lives are guided by these principles that these paintings represent. And, you know, I got to do it. That's kind of cool.
Oh, aren't you sweet? Yeah, the way you seem so grateful.
I couldn't agree more. It was, even though I'm not a practicing Catholic,
I understand, and in fact, an atheist.
And I understand.
To put too fine a point on it,
the importance of getting it right, you know, because my piece that I made, Father uses as a teaching tool, you know. So,
oh, it has carvings in it,
the
symbols
inlays of all of the seven sacraments, and I wanted them to be big and bold enough so people in the rear pews could see them while he's talking and be inspired by them. You know, so everything had to be done right.
The back of the chair, though.
The back of the chair is ridiculous.
The back of the chair is the best part.
I know, and nobody sees it.
It's so nice.
What's that about?
You know, I don't know. I mean, the back was the back, and I say, why don't we put a carving on the back? And he's like, okay. So I said, what are we going to do? He said, how about a cross with the stole over it? And I said, okay, I'll recreate your embroidery onto it. So if you go to the back of the chair, the stole that's hanging off of that is the same stole that he wears.
Oh, he wears the same one all the time?
And yeah, that's his with the grapes on it.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah. So, yeah, no, the back of it is ridiculous. And, you know, and that's why people really do need to go down to the church and see this work, because
it's
pretty impressive.
It's pretty impressive. And not to mention the other furniture on the sanctuary that was built by that guy, I forget his name.
I think he's a parishioner.
He's a parishioner. He
is. Right. So not as interesting as the atheists.
And no. He was Jesus's, carpenter.
Yeah, right. So, but who's to say you as well are not?
I'm not Jesus's carpenter.
You're not?
No.
Pretty inspired work. And I'm not proselytizing. Please don't get me wrong.
Thank you.
I would never do that. I don't even know how. But it does feel like inspired artwork, if you believe in inspiration.
I was totally inspired. You know,
by what?
I don't know. I think there's something just peaceful about it. And I really loved working with Father and Mike, you know. And I don't know that I would have that same experience at another church.
Who is Mike, the other Mike that you're talking about now?
Mike, the operations guy.
Okay.
Mike Rapone. And the whole experience of working with those two was, I think, what made it so great. I don't know.
Yeah.
They're
good. They're good people.
So they were there while you were carving?
No. They were there for guidance, you know.
So you would show them how it's coming along and they would make...
And they would say either yes or no, or good direction, bad direction, let's go somewhere, you know. And I mean, basically I designed it, but, you know, I couldn't have really designed it without their...
input.
Yeah, their input and their understanding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same.
So.
Yeah. Yeah,
so,
I would.
Same with you.
Same.
You know,
Father Mike was very, very involved in the design. You know, he kind of, you know, he gave an idea at first what he thought he wanted to see, and then I would make a sketch and think, oh, this must be what, you know, I think this is what he wants, and I'd show it to him, and he'd be like, no, that's not right. And so, you know, he really did have an idea in mind, but I just, you know, it was a matter of coming up with what exactly.
You had to pick it out of his head.
And to work it out.
Yeah. Just remembering.
You know, he wasn't, whatever you want to do. He definitely had ideas about it.
Right.
And when we finally hit it on the head with the sketches, he was like, yes, that's exactly, yeah.
I remember from the event, the unveiling, if you will, that you told us he did have specifications or like real... More than suggestions, you know, important ideas about a particular station.
He wanted with all of the works, he wanted...
There's 14 of them, by the way, those of you who don't remember the Stations of the Cross. They're kind of one of those lost devotionals.
Holly can name them in order
I definitely can at this point, yeah. He wanted his parishioners, and the way he put it was, he wanted his parishioners to look up at these paintings and say to themselves, wow, he must have really loved me. He did not want to spare any detail in terms of, he didn't want to clean them up. He wanted to show the blood and show the suffering. You know, he did not want these to be nice and, you know, pretty.
How big are they?
They are 24 by 36, and that includes a border that I also painted around them. They're unframed, gallery-wrapped canvas, and the borders are gold leaf with a lily design that goes around them that I designed along with Father, with his guidance, the lily being a symbolic of St. Catherine, for one, and also the rebirth of Easter.
Okay.
Yeah. So
yes, if you see images of St. Catherine of Siena, she's holding
lilies. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. That was his guidance on the pieces. Is he really wanted to show the suffering and why he wanted people to feel that?
Did he ever come to the studio?
He didn't. He didn't. We did. We emailed. I sent him pictures, and I came to the church with sketches.
Okay.
But he never did come to the studio.
Same with you, Dana.
Never.
Yeah. Nope. It's too far to go to New Haven. West Simsbury,
by the way, it's really far.
No, it is there. It's far. It's like 56 miles from.
There's no good way to get there.
No, there isn't.
Yeah.
There's no direct way.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Beautiful parish. Lovely people.
Yeah. Lovely.
Yeah.
Really nice.
And a nice ride.
Well, I was running on fumes, and one of the parishioners led me to the nearest gas station. She could have just given me directions,
sure.
But she made sure that I got there. You know? I mean, how lovely is that? I don't even know her name. Thank you, person.
They're very nice up there.
They really are.
They're very sweet people.
Yeah.
You know, we were able to be with a lot of them on that night of our talk, and I mean, they couldn't be nicer and more welcoming.
Absolutely.
To us.
I was just... Yeah.
Yeah,
I felt very, very welcomed.
Yep.
Everybody was so kind, not just about, you know, the pieces that we made, but, you know, they were just very...
Yep.
Just yeah.
So pleasant.
Yeah. If you are just joining us, we're talking with painter Holly Whiting and furniture maker Dana Cinto about their artistic contributions to the life of St. Catherine of Siena Catholic Church in West Simsbury, Connecticut. This is Reasonably Catholic Keeping the Faith, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown, providing community radio that matters. Next, at the opening reception celebrating the new improved St. Catherine of Siena Church, parishioners respond to the artwork. Holly just told me something about you. She says you're the gentleman who wept a little bit when you first saw her work. Can you recall that? What is it that you felt when you saw Holly's work that touched you?
I thought it was the humanity of Jesus, I think, more than anything else. And as she said, you know, that relates so much to all of suffering humanity today. So that was but then it finishes with such a message of hope at the end, and it is expressed by the shadows that come to finally fully express themselves in light. So...
That was poetic. Thank you. So you were saying that the whole transformation of the church.
It's been amazing. It's been over a few years, and it's through the vision of Father Michael White, who foresaw the whole picture. We as parishioners saw it in bits and pieces, and then the stations and the furniture. It's just been amazing. And now that it's all together and we hear the stories from the different artists, it's just a beautiful story.
Getting back to your making the works, how to put this, I'm just projecting here as a Catholic person, but it's hard to imagine your accomplishing what you did just kind of by thinking, well, this is the subject matter, and I'm just going to do it. I mean, it feels so... You know what I was saying? It feels so personal and heartfelt. And was there any spiritual, I don't even know if this word applies in your situation, but what's a better word to say that it was deeper than your typical commission, the experience of it? Could we say that?
I guess in a way you could, but really, for the most part, I look at my commissions are really all, each one is a new kind of, it's unique and it's a new thing, requiring different things. Like this one required me to hire a couple of models and, obviously, have a guy in my studio dressed in a loincloth.
Yeah, carrying a cross.
And carrying a cross. I mean,
did you really have a cross?
Yes. Yeah, we made a loincloth out of an old T-shirt.
Yeah.
And what about the cross?
And a wig.
And then the cross,
what I did
with the cross, I had him hold a 2x4, or maybe it was a 2x6. Yeah. So I only really had the one, direction of the cross piece. I constructed a small cross out of wood that I used to kind of get the different perspectives in the different views. But yeah, he held a big heavy piece of wood, so that I got that kind of that look of the weight. But to answer your question, no, I really do kind of look at it as this is just. It was a great commission. It was fun to do, and it
was
different.
You have to ask, it's so crass, but how much did it come to with all the gold leaf and the...
Not nearly as much as it should have.
Oh, you donated your time and work.
Yeah, and it wasn't 24 karat gold leaf, to be fair. It was Dutch leaf, which is a composite, and so that was, definitely not, not a huge... expense.
And
there.
The same with you, Dana.
Right.
It was less than it would have been to make such a piece.
Now that I know how much work goes into something like that,
you would have charged more.
I would have charged more. I would have.
We should say, lest people, especially Catholics who are listening, if any are listening, that because, we're sensitive to expenditures of the church on what could be considered
frivolous.
Extraneous,
sure.
Frivolous things.
Yeah.
And we want people to understand that Father, besides being a lover and supporter of art, he got this money donated.
Yeah, this was all... parishioner donations.
Yeah, no,
we're not taking bread out of the poor.
No, what he did with the stations is I think you could, a parishioner could sponsor a particular station, right. Is how they did it.
Yeah, and one gentleman sponsored my entire project.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
No, and I engraved his name on the bottom of the chair and everything.
Oh.
So his name goes in perpetuity.
Yeah.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it just speaks to how devoted the parishioners are to Father and to the church. They really, it's a wonderful community.
They love him.
Yeah.
But getting back to your experience of making the art, I think what you were getting at is, really, it's a commission.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's okay. You're what we call a professional.
Yeah. It was a great commission. And certainly, like I said, I didn't do a lot of figure work before that, although I have in the past, I've certainly studied the figure. But it was...
Because you went to art school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. But it was great to spend that much time just working solely on the figure. And I had my models come, a number of times to, reconfigure different, stations when I... had to rework them for some reason, but it was just another commission, I guess. But it was also, I knew the weight of it, and I've mentioned this before. I did feel very grateful to be given that opportunity to create something that is very, very important to so many people.
And you would
people.
Do it again for other parishes?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Did you have recollections of your Catholic childhood as you were working on the story?
maybe a little. I do remember going through the stations at at Lent, you know, yeah. they would go through and read them all, but not a whole lot of, yeah. So not really a part of my life I necessarily revisit.
I know. Right. Well, that's why I'm reluctant to. It's always touchy to ask people what it is that caused them to leave the church. I mean, I often have one foot out myself. Is there a particular issue that made you decide, you know what, I can't really do this?
Well, what's interesting, and I think probably my situation might be a little different from Dana's and anybody else's, is when I was an adolescent, my parents, we kind of left the church together because my parents became born-again Christians. And it was, the Catholic Church was far too,
rule bound? You're making your hands make parameters?
Yeah, like sort of structured in a way that,
it wasn't biblical enough. It wasn't.
Yeah, I guess that's a good way to put it. Thanks
okay.
for that.
Yeah.
So I was still very young at this point, and
how old?
I don't know. I was probably 12-ish.
And the only child?
No.
Okay.
The youngest of four.
Okay.
And
but everybody left.
But they were all pretty much yeah.
Okay.
And so I was struggling. I had been struggling from the age of 7 or 8 with, is God really there? Is there? I don't really believe that.
Interesting.
And then you know, so then I went through and said, okay, all right, this is what we're doing, and but I continued to struggle even as a born again Christian. I continued to question that it didn't seem right.
Didn't seem right. What part?
The whole, I believe in science.
I believe in science. Too mystical, too.
It's too
irrational.
You know, I believe that people came up with, with religion, you know, basically, to explain a lot of unexplainable things. And we know a lot of those things now. We can explain a lot of things. And, it doesn't, a lot of it just doesn't make sense to me.
Does atheism sit right with you?
Yeah, I just.
So you're not agnostic on the subject. You're not like, well, there's things.
No, not at all. No, I'm pretty clear.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't, I don't equivocate. About that.
Okay. It's not even a thing.
What do you mean?
Atheism.
It doesn't occur to you.
It's not even a thing. It's just.
I'm reminded that I'm not a believer is when somebody reminds me.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
yeah.
I just go and live my life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I just don't know how you do that. I don't know how you do that. I mean, my mother would say, thank God for God.
Oh, God, that's funny.
Yeah. I mean, my mother reminds me, you know, although she tries not to because I've asked her not to, but my mother does. But, you know, my mother thinks it's pretty funny. When I got this commission, she said, oh, God has a sense of humor. You know,
well,
I think
it is.
She thinks of everything that happens as a sign,
yeah.
as a
yes.
way that God is trying to, you know, show me that, yep. you know.
Yep. I believe that
no
myself.
Way.
I'm sorry.
That's
I
fine.
Do.
That's
I
fine.
Think it must be a gene.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know, I just, yeah.
yeah.
I feel like if God was that interested in affecting the lives of people on earth, that he would. I don't know, that he would stop genocide, you know, or
yeah,
other things
yeah.
like,
yeah.
you know,
or he wouldn't
children being raped
small.
And slaughtered.
Yeah.
So I really, yeah. So
I get that.
So
no,
when
I
my
do.
Mom says, oh, God, let us have a really good weather day for that wedding, you know,
yeah,
not so much.
Because somebody else had a bad weather day.
Like,
somewhere else on the world, there was a tsunami.
You know, and
you know, so
right.
not so great.
Somebody's
a day.
Little dog got slaughtered because,
yeah.
you know, there's some jerk who's, you know,
yeah.
I don't know, it
yep.
just doesn't.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Or UConn won because God
yeah.
was.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, people
yeah.
are narcissistic to think that God
yeah.
is like
cares.
There to serve them
right.
individually. And you know what?
Yeah.
Yeah. How do we know what God's like?
Well, we do.
I just feel like I understand, you know, that free will and all that. And you know, God, the idea is that God, I don't know, it's like a big experiment. Like God created mankind only to see mankind fail and run tests on mankind. And it just seems so, it seems so narcissistic.
It seems
and
so abusive.
And it just seems so...
Set up for failure.
Yeah, but you know what? I have
it's
a
like
beautiful
why, you
priest
know?
Friend who would say that God kind of needs us. It sounds counterintuitive because we think of God as all powerful and controlling, but that God gave us free will as a generous gift that results in our often screwing up. You know, and
but what it also results in is it results in the suffering of innocent people and animals who didn't do anything, whose free will was not involved in their fate. So that's what, you know, that's where I go with that.
But that's where we come in. We're supposed to be, you know, God has no hands but ours.
And many
kind of
and
thing.
Many of us and many humans are great and devote their lives to other people and good causes,
but I don't think you need to be religious to be that.
You know,
I mean, you could be morally okay. Just because,
you know, my, you know,
right just because
wrong.
It's the right thing to do.
Yeah, you don't need to.
Not because you want to.
I don't need, you know, a god or a church or somebody.
You know, and there's a lot of different religions, and they all think they're the right one.
Exactly. That's the problem,
you know,
right?
I mean, evangelicals think, well, Jesus Christ is the only way to heaven, and if you don't believe in Jesus Christ, you don't go.
I think even the Pope wouldn't say that anymore.
Yet he doesn't, but many Christians do. Yeah. Yet I have Jewish friends, atheist friends, who work for the good of mankind, who you know, are selfless people who work constantly for charitable causes. They're going to hell? I don't buy it.
No one thinks so that anymore. No, really.
Well, no, they do.
Yeah.
They do. I know them.
Really?
No,
yeah.
A lot of them still do.
So I that doesn't sit right with me.
Yeah, I'm with you, girlfriend. Scary.
You know, and then the other thing I think, you know, people like my mother, who I absolutely love and adore, if she thinks I'm going to hell, why would God do that to her? If she's such a good Christian, why would God
send her daughter to
give
hell.
Her that, saddle her with that sadness for all of eternity.
Wow.
Knowing that her, that doesn't make any sense to me.
You think you're going to hell?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
well, yeah.
Mom, Holly's all right.
Yeah, you're not.
No,
well,
we should do a whole episode about hell.
No, no, anybody.
You know the,
well, of course not. There is
no
hell.
You know the stations.
There's no hell.
My heart. You're not going to hell.
Oh, my gosh. This is too funny.
Oh, somebody asked me on Facebook, would you rather that God just didn't give us free will? Would you rather we were robots? And I was like, well, of course not. But so what do you think? So is God evil or something like that? And I was like, well, no, there is no God. It's like you just want to keep getting me to talk about whether what God is like.
I would rather actually talk about your art.
Yeah,
all right,
me too.
You're artists, and it's rare that I have the opportunity to talk to artists, and like God needs us, I need you. So I'm going to ask you my honking big question, and it's rather personal, and I typically don't get this personal on the show, but it's kind of also important enough to me that I feel I want to ask. This is a chat with Holly Whiting and Dana Cinto, who, though they don't believe in God, created what I'd call inspired artwork for St. Catherine of Siena Catholic Church in West Simsbury, Connecticut. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown, providing community radio that matters. Next, Father Michael White talks about his impulse to remake St. Catherine of Siena Church and how he did it. What's with you and art?
I can't draw a straight line with a ruler, and I'm jealous of anybody who has artistic talent. I have none.
But what made you think we have to art up this church?
Because I'm not a minimalist. I believe that particularly the Catholic faith is very much a faith of symbols and signs. And we're a sacramental church. So a sacrament is a visible sign of an invisible reality.
Was the church boring before?
The church was all white. This was all one big white wall. There was no stone, no stained glass window. There was nothing. There was no color. There was absolutely nothing here. It was a I looked at it as an airport hangar. That's how I saw it the first time I came.
Yes. How long ago was that?
11 years ago this week.
And was it almost immediately that you decided we're going to do something in here?
No, because you have to first start with the people and get them. They have to buy into it. They have to have ownership of it. And they have to see that, you know, you're not just doing it to put a gem on a building, but the things that are of beauty represent what we're seeking.
But to be the devil's advocate, sure, in a church, no less, you know, churches are strapped for, yeah, money, and this must have cost some money.
How much would you think it cost?
Oh my gosh, I can't begin to guess. Just one of those paintings would be $1,000, and that would be a bargain.
Yeah, the whole renovation of this church, from the painting to the stone to the stained glass window to all of the furniture to the new floors, which are marble and everything, was $140,000. Churches spend millions and millions, and they don't get the same impact. You don't have to spend a lot of money. A lot of it was volunteerism, and all of it was donations. Nothing came from the church itself. Families wanted to upgrade and make the church a more warm, welcoming, and beautiful place. So it was all donations.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Well, you know,
that's a credit to you.
No, you just have to ask. People want to be involved, they want to learn, and they want to be. And you just have to show them how to do it. I don't mean show them how to do it, like impart it on them. You just have to invite them to do it. Many things are lost for want of asking, you know.
Will you make a donation to the radio station?
Didn't I go once and talk to you?
I'm kidding. So even today's Stations of the Cross service, you were not leading it, right, which I thought was kind of an enlightened absence, if you will.
Well, you know, I'm pretty orthodox. I'm traditional.
I remember that.
We do we have stations every Friday and Friday evening and Friday morning. So we do it twice on Fridays. I always lead the morning ones because it's traditional and it's right after Mass. But we have youth lead them one night. We have the women's club another night. So that's how you get ownership. You get people to realize that it's not the difference between the clergy and the laity is not to be a separation, but they're to be partners and to work together. And I have my role as an ordained minister with the sacramental life. The people have their role to build the church up. And as I said in the beginning, the Mass is ended, go in peace. It means go out and change the world. So that's their job.
You're something.
Well, people have called me something, that's for sure.
You know, you look great. I read about your health adventure.
Yes.
A parishioner donated a kidney, yes, if I remember. And look at you.
I feel great. I feel like a whole new person I am. You know, a wonderful woman in this parish. She felt when I told everybody that I would be taking some time off because I had to, you know, get treatments and things. A lot of people got tested. Actually, 4 people tested as positive and were willing to help. So it was an amazing thing. It really was.
Is she here tonight?
No, she's not. Actually, her father in Phoenix, his name is Frank, is not well at all. Wow. She's been flying back and forth.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you for your time and for your beautiful dedication to art, ecclesiastical art. Let me ask you a question since we're talking about that. I happen to be a fan of Michelangelo,
uh-huh,
and I believe he should be a saint. I believe a cause should be open,
right,
for his sainthood. What do you think?
I don't know how the process is, but there is the congregation for the saints. You know, I suppose people can write and say, offer that suggestion.
He gave his whole life.
Absolutely, beautiful. You know, there are so many wonderful and beautiful artists in the history of the church, and that's why it always amazes me when people say the church is against science or colleges or universities or art. If it wasn't for the church, there would be no universities. They founded them. You know, art is a major part. And we just have to realize that we need to look at each other, whether it's science and art. We're not boxing partners, we're dance partners.
Oh, we need to come together.
I want to clone you.
Well, we're against that, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
If I had a hammer, I'd a hammer in the morning, I'd a hammer in the evening, all over this land, I'd a hammer out.
I paint. And I've painted for, oh my gosh, I'm embarrassed to think about how many decades I've been painting and taking courses in art, various kinds, various media, various subjects. And yet I feel like I can't call myself an artist. I don't know what's... I should get therapy, perhaps, but you're going to be my therapist. Like, have you ever experienced that self-doubt of not thinking of yourself as an artist? Or did you just say, I'm an artist? This is what I do. It's my life, and I'm an artist. I feel like I'm a student artist.
Yeah.
You know, at some point, I got to stop being... I'm pretty long in the tooth now. I'm 59 in August. To be a student artist. You know, I want to
We're all students, and we're all students, I think, for you never stop being a student. I still take classes.
You do? I feel better.
I teach classes,
like,
I take
classes.
Classes,
Maria?
Well, because there's always something that you don't know.
And there are people you can learn from in the class.
I've been painting for years, but I don't know anything about alcohol inks, so I took an alcohol ink class last year.
Alcohol ink is a verb?
Alcohol ink.
Alcohol ink.
Alcohol ink, that's something else.
That's something completely different.
That's something completely different.
That's what you do on
the
weekend.
We can talk about that after. But,
I've never heard of alcohol ink.
Yeah, no, I hadn't either. It's really kind of cool. You get really neat effects with it. The problem with me is I love all these different, you know, things I come up with, and then my studio gets overrun with all these different products that I can't possibly get time to use, but
same with me.
It's okay to be a student. It's okay to be a student forever.
Yeah. No, you always have to be learning new things.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm not, like, I don't paint. The one thing I don't do is I don't paint, but I do everything else. You know, I don't even know that I would consider myself an artist in as much as I am a maker.
I've heard this term. This is a new word, maker.
It's a new word, but it's a very old thing.
It's a very broad and all-encompassing term.
What is the difference between a maker?
You are most definitely an artist. I mean, your work isn't just...
Well, thank you.
Yeah. People should definitely go to Dana's website.
We are going to give you a website.
Or Instagram page.
Or your Instagram, yes.
Well, why don't we
see her beautiful work.
This is the moment. Tell us how to look at your work online. Dana?
The best way to look at my work is on my Instagram account, which is at Instagram. It's Dana_Cinto_design_studios.
Cinto is Cinto.
Correct.
I pronounced it the Italian way on principle, but she,
and thank
she
you
likes
for that.
Either way.
So just don't say Skinto.
Oh, do people say Skinto?
All the time.
Oh.
Yeah, no, it's awful.
Soft scene. Okay.
Like as if you would say Skyence instead of science.
I mean it. Don't get me started. All right. Do you have a website as well?
I do. It's DanaSkinto.com. Okay.
All one word.
Yes.
All right. And Holly?
My website is HollyWhitingArt.com. And I am also on Instagram, Holly_Whiting. And Facebook, Holly Whiting Art.
Okay, very good. Folks, check it out. All right. How did you first come to be an artist? Were you in your childhood, Holly, always drawing, painting?
I was always drawing and painting, and it never even occurred to me that I would be anything else besides an artist. But it's interesting because what you said before about, you know, not feeling like you should, like you could call yourself an artist, even though I spent my entire childhood making art and thinking like an artist, when it came time to, like, start life, as you would say, I had very little confidence. I didn't feel confident enough to apply to the best art schools. I wound up going to, and I don't want to say it wasn't great, but I went to a state school where art was definitely not one of their stellar, you know, majors. But I majored in art, and I graduated, and I went to work in sort of an advertising publishing place that had absolutely nothing to do with my degree, and I could have gotten the job without a degree. And it wasn't as, you know, for years I worked not in directly in art because I felt, well, I can't really call myself an artist. That was really just a childhood, you know, silly thing that I was, you know, I didn't really feel able to, like, who am I? What business do I have? And so it really wasn't until about 15 years ago that I, you know, started, I was working at a job drafting. So I was, you know, I was drawing, but not really creatively.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't want to sit at a desk all day. I want to, you know, be active. I want to make stuff. I want to be creative. And so I started my own company doing faux finishing. And
Faux finishing.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. And then,
and you
know.
You still do that.
I still do that, and murals and that kind of thing. And, you know, create my art on, you know, when I can. And I also get quite a few commissions, as we talked about with the, like, the Stations of the Cross.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was still, I still had that, you know, I graduated, this was back in the 80s, and, you know, was like, well, as a girl, should I, you know, my dad was kind of like, well, why do you want to go to college? You're just going to get married and have kids. And
wow.
Really, don't you just, it was still that time.
Yeah.
And so I felt.
How old are you?
I am 55.
Okay.
I had to think about that.
So was it a sacrifice?
Yeah, I think so. I think I'm 55.
When you decided, I'm going to start a company, I'm going to be an artist, was that a risk?
It would have been more of a risk if it wasn't for my awesome husband who, you know, had a job,
right,
and health insurance. And
yes.
So I was able to, I'm very fortunate.
Right.
So I was able to, you know, maybe go several weeks without a paycheck,
yeah,
and
yeah,
not, you know, starve.
Right.
Because it was certainly not a sure thing right away. Mm-hmm. Although it wasn't terrible.
Yeah.
I probably, looking back, it was probably silly to just quit my job and start, you know, making art and hoping that it sold. But it wasn't bad. It wasn't terrible, and really don't regret it at all. Yeah.
Dana?
Again, I never wanted to be an artist. I've always just liked to build things. And as a little girl, you know, I was always with my father in the garage, and we'd be building things. And
what
my
kind of things?
Whatever. I mean, and not like regular things. Like, my father and I built a railing, you know, when I was like 10. He brought an arc welder home from work, and he and I built a railing.
Like a wrought iron railing?
A railing.
That's so cool.
Oh, you really are,
yeah,
Italian.
No, and he, oh, totally. And he also, he reminded me of a project that I and my brother did when I was like maybe 8 and my brother was 9. My father installed some French drains in the house, and we had to, I guess, pull the big concrete staircase away from the house. So here's my father and these two little kids with crowbars and logs, and we're like in leverage, and we're rolling the staircase away from the house, installing the French drain, and then putting it back. So I was like, more like, I'm like more of an engineer than,
yeah,
an artist, and that's why I've always just like to make things and figure things out, problem solve, take things apart, put them back together. And I didn't go to school for art. I went to school for manufacturing engineering.
Oh.
So in 1999, I quit my job and sort of did what Holly did. I quit my job and I packed my cats and my stuff and I moved to Tampa, Florida.
Why?
Why not?
Tampa. You like the warm weather.
I do.
Okay.
And so I went down there and I made friends with a couple of decorators, and I, you know, I started out as a faux finisher.
Oh,
in 1999.
Cosmic.
Yep. And then, I don't think I ever told you that story, did I?
You never did.
And in 2002, I moved back to Connecticut, and I moved my company to Stamford. And there was this building of all these crazy artists on Canal Street. And I moved in with there. And that's where I really actually, I think, became an artist. I was influenced by them.
Yes.
And they led me where to, led me somewhere. I don't even know where it was.
Right.
But they led me to where I am today. But back then, I developed a technique using tinted resins that I created a lot of artwork with. And I sold a bunch of it. But I still wanted to go get back into my making thing. So, like, eventually, I got back into, like, the creation of objects.
Because these tinted resin works were more two-dimensional on the wall.
Art, yeah.
I see.
So
I see.
It's like, you know, a painting, but with a different medium.
They were pretty cool. I've seen them.
Yeah. Wow. And so, you know, so now I'm actually back doing things with tinted resins because now all of a sudden it's like the big thing. And
oh
I'm like,
gosh.
Well, wait, I was doing it 20 years ago. So I just want to put that out there. I already did it.
You can see some of these on your site.
Yeah.
Good.
And so now I just, you know, I mean, I make furniture. So most of the things I do is furniture or objects or whatever weird thing I could think of.
Out of wood.
Out of all different mediums.
Well,
no, all different mediums. So concrete, cast concrete, plastics, metal, wood.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
I
want to
say mostly wood, though, yeah?
Mostly wood, but yeah. You know, just because, I mean, that's what I'm able to process the most effectively right now in my shop. But, you know, I mean, I having worked with my father when I was little in his tool and die shop, I mean, I know how to work all of the metal processing machines.
Oh, it's
she has a CNC machine in her shop.
What is that?
It's like, well, you describe it.
Well, it's a three-dimensional carving machine that runs off vectors, so...
it's like...
That's what I did, the carving
3D
on the back
printing
of.
Back in the day.
It's 3D printing only backwards. So what it is it's subtractive manufacturing rather than... additive manufacturing. So the 3D printing deposits material.
Yes.
And CNC removes material.
I dig. Wow, you made that very clear.
You're welcome.
And I know, Holly, because I saw your work exhibited aside from St. Catherine. You were in an exhibit down at the Lyme Art Academy.
Art Association.
Art Association. Mm-hmm. And the work that was selected, and by the way, it was very competitive, was using an experimental technique, wasn't it? Wasn't it rusty?
Yeah, I had two works in the show, and one of them utilized reactive metals. And I've been doing a lot with reactive metals lately, and it's really a lot of fun. It's basically paint that has copper elements in it, or iron, or bronze. And when you oxidize it, it rusts and patinas.
Love rust.
Creates the most gorgeous colors, some of which you can predict and some you can't.
Love that.
It's very cool. Yeah, so I've been doing a lot of abstract landscapes with this method, although I have done representational works with it as well. Birds are one of my favorite subjects. And the other piece I had there was an abstract landscape triptych. It was mixed media based on, basically, I have a lot of stuff in my studio from my faux finishing.
Yeah.
Plaster, leaf, foil.
I love that.
And I just kind of throw it all in there and see what comes up. Yeah.
I hate this, but we should go. And it's not because of me so much as the fact that Dana is heading back to St. Catherine Church. Because Father Michael, bless his heart, he wants you to do some more work.
Yep. And we'll be designing and building the baptismal font.
Oh, my gosh.
For the church.
He's like Pope Julius in the Renaissance.
I don't know what that means, but...
Well, you know, the popes who hired Michelangelo to do everything.
Yes,
the ceiling and the
dome.
And the, I mean, he was often not paid in a timely manner, and yet...
Well, St. Catherine of Siena pays well and in a timely manner.
Yeah, they pretty much pay on time.
Yeah, they do.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're a joy to work for.
They really are.
You guys are a joy to talk to.
Thank you.
I really
Thank
appreciate
you.
Your coming. It was fun, wasn't it? I knew it would be fun. Great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you for having us.
That was a visit with artists Holly Whiting and Dana Cinto, along with the pastor and parishioners of St. Catherine of Siena Catholic Church in West Simsbury, Connecticut, talking about the love that went into the new improved worship space. You can see photos of Holly's Stations of the Cross and Dana's Presider's Chair and Table posted later tonight at reasonablycatholic.com. And one last thing, please don't forget to make a contribution to WESU's Limping Along Spring Pledge Drive. The fiscal year is about to end, and we're still thousands of dollars from our puny goal. Please go to WESUFM.org/pledge and do what you can. Thanks. Now stay tuned for The Jive at 5, then Wonderland with DJ Cheshire Cat.